By official counts, more than 328,000 people have died from COVID-19, but the true death toll is likely much higher.
There is no doubt that more people died in Michigan during this time period. And there is no doubt that officially what's showing on the death certificates is not, that's not all connected to COVID-19. And so the real question becomes in this gap.
Plus, China threatens Hong Kong's autonomy.
This move seems fairly likely to raise concerns about rule of law in Hong Kong and could erode its status as a financial center.
It's Thursday, May 21st. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. Another 2.4 million Americans filed for unemployment last week. That continues a downward trend week over week, but the numbers are still historically high. And the count doesn't include hundreds of thousands of self-employed and gig economy workers. They're receiving benefits from the coronavirus stimulus package. President Trump took a trip to Michigan today, his third to a swing state in recent weeks. During a visit to a Ford Motor plant that's been making ventilators, he didn't wear a face mask, even though it's company policy and had been requested by the state's Democratic Attorney General. Trump has had repeated clashes with Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer over her response to the pandemic, including the state's lockdown and plans to send absentee ballot applications to all registered voters, for which he threatened to withhold federal funds. Later in the show, we'll talk more about why the death toll in Michigan has likely been undercounted. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg says his company will permanently shift toward a more remote workforce. He says within the next decade, he expects as many as half of the company's employees to be working from home. More companies are rethinking how workplaces will change even after the pandemic is over. Actress Lori Loughlin and her husband have agreed to plead guilty to fraud conspiracy charges in a college admissions cheating scandal. Last spring, the couple was accused of working with a college counselor to fake their daughter's applications as athletic recruits to get them into the University of Southern California. Authorities have charged 33 parents in the scheme. More than 20 have already pleaded guilty or agreed to do so. Coming up after the break, China proposes controversial new rules on Hong Kong. You might remember last summer when anti-government protests began raging in Hong Kong, largely targeting China's encroachment on the city's self-governance. In recent months, those protests have mostly stopped because of the coronavirus pandemic. Now, China is proposing new national security laws that would tamp down on that pro-democracy movement and challenge the territory's autonomy. Joining me now to explain is Wall Street Journal Deputy China Bureau Chief Josh Chin. Josh, tell us more about this resolution and what it means for Hong Kong.
Right. So what it means is that China's legislature is going to start drafting a new national security law for Hong Kong. And what the Chinese legislature's spokesman said is that the new rule will target secessionist and subversive activity as well as foreign interference and terrorism. What this means is you know, Hong Kong has the past year since March last year been dealing with pretty serious anti-government protests. And what it means for those protesters is that the Hong Kong government will be able to use this law to prosecute them, as well as other critics and other threats to the Communist Party.
Josh, what are you hearing from observers about the timing here as Hong Kong is beginning to emerge from the pandemic?
The pandemic probably is a bit of a factor in the sense that it's convenient because Hong Kong has rules right now related to the pandemic that limit gatherings to 8 or fewer people. So any crowd, anyone who's in a crowd, anyone who's a part of a protest can be arrested on that basis, which means it's going to be a little bit harder maybe for protest organizers to rally support in response to this law. But it's also, you know, right now China is having its annual legislative meetings. And if China was going to do something, now would be the time to do it. They've been trying to get a national security law passed through Hong Kong's legislature. They wanted Hong Kong to pass it itself. But the local opposition has been so high that they weren't able to do it that way. So now they're jamming it through in another way.
And we've been reporting extensively on those protests of the past year. What are you hearing from protesters about this resolution?
News sort of leaked out ahead of time in the Hong Kong media, and the reaction was a sort of mix of shock and anger, as you might expect. This is definitely a major threat to protesters in Hong Kong and seemed pretty likely to sort of intensify the conflict down there. You know, a bigger issue in some ways is what this means for Hong Kong's autonomy. You know, Hong Kong has been governed under a system called One Country, Two Systems since 1997 that has granted it a certain level of self-governance and rule of law, and that's helped maintain its status all these years as a global financial center. And this move seems fairly likely to raise concerns about rule of law in Hong Kong and could erode its status as a financial center.
That's Wall Street Journal Deputy China Bureau Chief Josh Chin. Josh, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
And we report exclusively that U.S. senators are now considering a resolution that would sanction China over the move, which is expected to get a rubber stamp by China's legislature next week. Michigan has been one of the states hardest hit by the coronavirus pandemic, and the true death toll is still unclear. In an exclusive analysis of data from the state, our team found there's likely been a substantial undercount of deaths attributed to COVID. Joining me now with more of the findings is Wall Street Journal reporter Coulter Jones. So, Coulter, tell us a little bit more about the data from Michigan that you took a look at here.
So what we looked at were death certificate data. This is what shows up once someone's died, what is listed as their cause of death, and any related contributing factors to their death. And we looked at a time period between mid-March and about mid-April, March 15th through April 18th, to look at, you know, how many deaths were being counted as connected to or caused by COVID and how many more deaths we were seeing. And we saw a spike of about, you know, there are about 13,000 people who died in the state, more than that during that time period. And you're averaging about 9,300. So you're seeing this significant bump in total deaths, and COVID-19 deaths were not exclusively accounting for that bump.
So say a little bit more on those findings that people may have died of other conditions that were caused by COVID, but then weren't counted in the overall death toll attributed to the coronavirus.
What we found was that particularly in the Detroit area, we're talking about three counties, Macomb, Wayne, and Oakland County, which includes the Detroit, you know, city area and like the neighboring suburbs, you're seeing this big spike in deaths. And you're seeing when people are dying at places like hospitals, you're seeing that spike is almost, you know, entirely made up of COVID-19 confirmed deaths. But people dying at home, people dying in nursing homes, COVID-19 is not making up that bump. And so what we're seeing is like 20% of the bump is made up by COVID-19. And what we don't know is that other 80% in the increase in deaths. Were those COVID-19 deaths that were misclassified? Was that something else? Is it connected to COVID-19? And that's really sort of where the numbers become significant, because there is no doubt that more people were dying in Michigan during this time period than during normal or recent history. And how much of that is directly connected to COVID-19, we can't be certain of without positive testing. And we know that there was a lack of testing in the state during that time period.
So meaning there could be a potential undercount of things that were caused by COVID but classified as something else.
Absolutely. And when we've talked to my co-reporter on the story, John Camp, and I talked to medical examiners and other people, and you know, they said without a test, particularly in a place like a nursing home where, you know, it's not uncommon for someone to die from pneumonia, you might just see somebody who's filling out the death certificate just list pneumonia, right? There were no tests. They didn't know for certain. They're just kind of listing it that way. But what we can see in the data and what is, you know, not disputed is that there's an uptick in these deaths, right? And so how that contributes to the undercount is totally up to the individual filling out the death certificate.
And we've been reporting at the Wall Street Journal how states count coronavirus deaths differently. What did your reporting about the data from Michigan tell you about what may be happening in other states?
Yeah, so our reporting focused kind of on two parts. One is the death certificates that our analysis was based off of, which is sort of like a final count that we think will be used by the CDC and others to sort of get a glimpse at like what's been going on. But everyone has probably been following this on a day-to-day basis where their individual state or their county or someone is including totals and total deaths that are going up. And it does vary by state. Some states are including only what they call COVID confirmed deaths, and then others are including COVID probable deaths. And that sort of distinction can lead to a big spike in what it looked like the number of cases or the number of deaths in a county or a city. And so even comparing data across states is not very easy with these initial numbers. And what I think is important to keep in mind is the initial numbers being reported on states and counties is sort of like what one of my colleagues has referred to as like exit polls. It's like our first glimpse at what's going on. And presumably the death certificates will give us a chance to get a really firm grasp on what we see or don't see. But even the death certificates may not give us a full picture on the total impact this disease has had.
And we know it's important to get an accurate count so we know the scope of the problem and how to treat it. What did you hear from experts about what could help us here to get a more accurate count?
So the guidance is that if you believe it is caused by COVID-19, you should list it on the death certificate somewhere. And that's going to be our permanent record, right? Something that we can look back, you know, decades from now and sort of look at things that, you know, may or may not be affected by the disease. So including probable or likely or even confirmed anywhere on the death certificate is the best policy going forward. And that is what the CDC has sort of encouraged and what we're looking at from World Health and other organizations on how to track this stuff best, because it's important to remember also that there are oftentimes when people die, there's not a confirmatory test that says this is what the person died from. The doctor in the hospital, the doctor in the nursing home, whomever it may be, a medical examiner who like looks at someone who's died at home, they're making their best judgment on their expertise at the time. And this question is becoming, since we are lacking testing, like how much you should confirm or not confirm it. And what the CDC is saying, you can include probable confirmation on these deaths and you should include it in the death certificate. And that's how we're going to count this up best. There is no doubt that more people died in Michigan during this time period. And there is no doubt that officially what's showing on the death certificates is not, that's not all connected to COVID-19. And so the real question becomes in this gap. And I think that's what we're going to be studying. We talked to, you know, one expert who said, you know, we'll probably be looking at this information 20 years from now. It's really like an ongoing process. And the more we learn about potential symptoms and asymptomatic, you know, conditions caused by the disease, the more we'll be able to say, like, this uptick likely was connected to the disease versus things that weren't or we didn't know about even like a week ago.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Coulter Jones. Coulter, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.